Now, 2 o'clock, focus on the Ukraine, with Rodney Leibold.
Well, good afternoon. I have enjoyed to be here and learn with you. So, what do you think of when you hear the word Ukraine? That's not supposed to be a hard question. What do we think of when we hear the word Ukraine? War. So, on February 24 of 2022, Russia invaded Ukraine, and our family actually happened to be there at that time. That's not why Russia invaded, but we did happen to be there, and we didn't see really anything of the war. We saw a little bit of beginning results. But I certainly have an interest in Ukraine. I lived there for 2 years in my youth, 1997 to 1999, and still certainly Ukraine is in my heart. I would like to bring in focus some things. First of all, I want to compare Ukraine with Russia and some other places to help us get an understanding of what it is. And then I would like to take a look at why that this war might be going on. I would like to talk a bit about the horrors of war. And then I want to finish with talking about the effect the war has had on the Christian church, especially the Mennonite church. I am by no means an authority on Ukraine. What I'm telling you, I believe, is true. But it might change by tomorrow. This is a very fluid thing, and I can't predict how that it will end. But I can tell you some things that I know, that I have seen, that I have heard from others who are over there, and then some things that I have read in the news, which I believe to probably be correct. Did the news get everything right about COVID? The news doesn't have everything right about the war either. Did you get everything right about COVID? Or did you change your mind as it went on and things too? So, you know, keep that in mind. So, Ukraine, the area of Russia and the area of Ukraine. So, by land area, Russia is the largest country in the world. Canada is the second largest country, and Russia is almost two times the size of Canada in land area. Russia is immense, spans many time zones. You could actually, if you lived in the extreme eastern part of Russia in a city called Vladivostok, if you would like to call someone in the enclave of Kaliningrad, if you'd like to call that person, sorry, if you lived in the west and you wanted to call the person in the east, you'd need to get up early in the morning to catch that guy at work yet in the west. So he's going home from work, you're on the way in yet. The same business day. Like it spans many time zones. Russia is huge. There's a Trans-Siberian Railroad. I believe you can ride on that thing for 7 days across the country. Now, I mean, it stops at places. It's not tearing 100 kilometers an hour for 7 days straight, day and night. But it is a large, large country. Ukraine is actually quite large, too, area-wise. Ukraine's the largest country in Europe, except the European part of Russia. Part of Russia is in Europe. It's the biggest country in Europe. Part of Russia is in Asia. The part of Russia that's in Asia is the biggest country in Asia. Ukraine is about the size of Saskatchewan. Or if you're from the United States, Ukraine's around almost as big as Saskatchewan. It's almost as big as Texas in land area-wise. Now, in population, Ukraine has approximately 43 million people. That makes it larger than Canada population-wise. That makes Texas has about 25 million people, so Ukraine's bigger than Texas population-wise. Saskatchewan has about 1,250,000 people, so Ukraine's even bigger than Saskatchewan population-wise. And I thought I could compare them. Russia has 145 million people, so that makes Russia approximately three times the size of Ukraine as population. I thought I would compare gross domestic product. Gross domestic product is how much goods and services that you make in a year, approximately what, you know, Justin could charge HST on. to give us an idea, gross domestic product. So this is given in trillions of dollars. So we don't understand trillions. So let's just use dollars numbers. Let's compare these countries, and let's say the United States has $25. It's $25 trillion. How much they goes through the books in a year? So 25. So China has would have 18. Germany 4. India about $3.70 times a trillion. Canada $2.20. Russia $2.13. Mexico $1.27, and Ukraine 20 cents. So Ukraine is a very poor country, actually. If you break this down in gross domestic product per person, United States, it's 70,000 per person. Now, it's not everyone has an even share. Trump has more than 70,000, and some people in the States have less than 70,000. China, there'd be about 12,000 available per person if everyone got the same. So because of China's population being so huge, even though 25 trillion to 18 trillion isn't that different, the fact that there's so many Chinese to divide that among, it's not much per person. Germany, 51,000. India, 2,000, which actually makes it like Kenya. India and Kenya on a per person gross domestic product are very similar. Canada, 51,000. Russia, 12,000, which makes Russia very close to Mexico at 10,000. So if you think Mexicans are poor, well, Russians are actually, on a per-person basis, they're very similar. Ukraine, 4,800. So again, it's a small country as far as money is concerned. A relatively poor country, really, in a per-dollar basis. Their languages are similar. Ukrainian and Russian are probably as close as High German and Pennsylvania German. So they are similar. If you only understand one, you cannot easily converse to someone who understands the other one, but you certainly would have, there would be enough similar words that you could make yourself understood with signs and wonders, and you could make yourself understood. The language is nothing, the Russian language is nothing like English. So I will recite John 3:16. You will probably not understand anything of it. Ibo tak vozlubil Bog mir, što dal syna svojego jedinorodnego, da bi svaki vjeruje v njega ne pogib, no imel žizn večnuju. So that's Russian. I cannot say it in Ukrainian. Okay, so that's a bit of an introduction. What is Russia? What is Ukraine? Now I'd like to look at why is there a war? Well, first of all, why do children fight? So why do children fight? Selfishness, right? And when children fight, is it usually just the one's fault? Now that part you don't necessarily see in the newspaper what parts of it are Ukraine's fault. Now can it be more one's fault than the other? For sure. And I think that probably is the case in this situation too. The Russian viewpoint, and so I'd like to read a little bit written by Conrad Black, which I think Conrad Black actually writes quite accurately. I think he thinks he writes quite accurately too. But I do think he's actually pretty accurate in this situation. So the Russian position, he says, is that since Ukraine was an integral part of Russia without even the status of a distinct province for two centuries, and is a fusion of Lithuanian, Russian, Polish, and Tatar ethnic groups that have never been a distinct entity, that may not quite be true. I think it was a country for a very short time, which was essentially a failed state in the 30 years of independence. So Russia thinks it really belongs to and is in Russia. So that's a Russian position. Another reason of why this might be happening, he says, Putin is trying to emulate the great Russian expansionists, Peter the Great, Joseph Stalin. But Ukrainians have caused Putin to look more like Mussolini. He was the dictator in Italy who couldn't even win in Greece. so it's embarrassing for Russia how the war has gone. So that the Russian position also is that there is sections of Ukraine that has a lot of Russian speakers in it. And so their idea is that those sections should belong to Russia. And those sections are also the sections with the most coal and other natural resources. And they're the sections right beside Russia in the east. What you'll read in the paper, the Donbas, which is two provinces, Lugansk and Donetsk, or Luhansk in Ukrainian, Lugansk in Russian, Luhansk in Ukrainian. Crimea is a part of Ukraine in the Black Sea that was actually part of Russia until the Soviet Union, and then because it was simpler for Ukraine to administer it because they could drive through it without going across a big bridge, Russia gave it to Ukraine to look after. The Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic was to look after it instead of the Russian Soviet Socialist Republic. And so then Russia now is saying that should have never been given to Ukraine, and so in 2014 they took it back. So the war, in some sense, the war started a long time ago, and this is in some ways a continuation. The Ukrainian position is that they want to be their own country. 88% of Ukrainians in 1991 voted to become an independent republic from the Soviet Union and separate from Russia, and even 77% in the Russian-speaking areas voted to be Ukraine. So Ukrainians do have a strong desire to be their own country. Some other things. Russian view. Russia has many grievances. This is something that you might not hear a lot in Western newspapers, but after the Soviet Union fell, and after the Cold War, there were many promises made by major powers, including Russia and the United States, and almost none of those promises have been kept. When the last Soviet leader, Mikhail Gorbachev, who died not very long ago, acceded to the reunification of Germany. So when he agreed to letting Germany be reunited, Secretary of State James Baker assured him that NATO would not advance one inch to the east of Germany. So that was a promise that he had made to Russia. The president whom he served, George H.W. Bush, so that's George Bush's father, the one that was the leader when Iraq invaded Kuwait and that war started. He famously gave what Nixon speechwriter William Safire called the Kiev chicken speech to the Ukrainian parliament, recommending that it remains in union with Russia. That was in 1991. He recommended it would stay in union with Russia. But Ukraine didn't want that. All major powers, including Russia and the United States, promised Ukraine, Belarus, and Kazakhstan that their borders would be respected in exchange for their renunciation in 1994 of nuclear weapons that they had inherited from the Soviet Union. So Ukraine had nuclear weapons, and they gave them up back to Russia again with the promise that Russia was going to keep peace with them and going to respect their borders. And the United States agreed with this too. And those promises haven't been kept. Needless to say, these solemn promises were forgotten almost as soon as they were made, and in the next several years, NATO accepted Poland, Hungary, Czechia, Slovakia, Bulgaria, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia had all been part of Soviet Union. So suddenly NATO, the alliance of Western countries, is right next door neighbors with Russia. Now, I don't think that NATO would have to be an enemy of Russia. I don't think it was maybe our desire to be, or NATO's desire to be an enemy of Russia. But Russia does view it in such a way, especially their current president. Another thing that we need to understand is who is Putin. So in 1999, when I left Ukraine, Putin was becoming the prime minister of Russia. So he was already an important politician then, and he's president now. It used to be, before this, Putin had been a member of the KGB, which was the secret police. That's his political background. He was a KGB member. He was a communist in his early days. Russia had a rule that you could only be president for 2 terms. But Putin was a very shrewd president. He had that figured out. So let's say that, is it Lauren? So let's say that Lauren is my very good friend. Everyone knows that. And let's say that I'm sort of the domineering person, and everyone knows that too. Lauren pretty much agrees with me. But so there was a man called Dmitry Medvedev, and he is... You may have recognized him as a previous president of Russia, and he is currently the chairman of the Security Committee. So Putin ran 2 terms as president, and then he became prime minister, which in Russia, the president is the one who goes around, shakes hands with the other people in other countries, and the prime minister is the one who sits at home and does the hard work of running government. So for 2 terms, Putin was president, and then he became prime minister for 1 term, and Dmitry became the president. And then after that, Putin became president again, and Dmitry became prime minister again. And then at sometime within that amount of time, they changed the rules that you could become president more than 2 terms if you got voted in again. So that's the kind of operator that Putin is. He's very shrewd, and he largely has it in a place now that he can be president for as long as he wishes to be. He seems to be quite in control. So he's running it as a dictator. Is he running it as a communist? Not really. There are some significant differences. He does let business have more free course, and especially businesses that benefit him. He does. The unregistered Baptist Church has had very much freedom. They've been largely left alone. So they're not persecuted, not in Russia, not at least certainly not the way they were back in the Soviet Union times. They've largely been left alone. Of the only official church in Russia is the Orthodox Church. So once again here, Putin was very shrewd. He saw that communism really didn't unify the country, but religion was a very strong unifying in Soviet lands. Religion is very important to those people. So now Putin has learned to do those religious things. He goes to church too, and he can light candles and put them there, and he knows how to cross himself. The leader of the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill, was a school buddy of Putin's. And the Russian Orthodox Church very strongly supports the Russian government and agrees with what they say and prays for them and blesses them and all of those things. Religion is a very important thing in Russia, not unlike the Catholic Church is quite important in Central America. There's a lot of similarities. Another reasons for the war. Sorry, when I was writing it out, I got my number one on one page and my number two part on the next page, and now they're not in order. Okay, so Russia would have the view that United States has an element of hypocrisy to it, and the West. Both of these countries meddle heavily in the foreign affairs of others. It's not just Russia that does, but the states does too, wherever that they have an interest. Russia would also have, an example would be Syria. So in the Syrian war, the states helped the rebels, Russia helped the president of Syria. And then because of that fighting between there, then the Islamic State started up, which was yet the third group trying to turn the Syrian into a really strong Muslim country. And so you had 3 groups fighting at once. That's still going on now, 12 years later. It's a horrible situation. Russia knows that the Bush clan, like Bush Senior and Bush Junior, Russia knows good and well that those men are very wealthy because of the oil industry. And Putin is also very wealthy because of the oil industry. So keep that in mind. Russia knows good and well that Trump was accused of colluding with Russia and favoring Russia and saying he can get along with Russia. Russia knows good and well that the Bidens are accused of the same kind of thing in China. Russia and China are also competitors. So not everything is as smooth and as beautiful as you may think. Who blew up that pipeline that went from Russia to Germany? I don't know, but my number one guess is that it was the United States of America. Russia knows that too. It was a Russian-owned pipeline. It was actually full of gas. Russia wanted to sell it to Germany, and now they can never do that again because the thing is ruined. It would cost so much money to build the thing again. The United States is viewed as being weak, militarily weak. That might surprise you a little bit, but think about these things. Did the United States win in the Korean War? Did they win in the Vietnamese War? Did they win in the Afghan War? Did they win in the Iraq War? That's maybe their strongest case to say they won. Did they win in Syria? United States, the West, tends to like handing money out for a while at the start, and then after a while they tend to get sick of this, and then they quit. And then after that, then the other elements that exist, whether the Afghanis or Russians or whoever, they can start to win later on. So it does appear Putin is hoping that the West eventually gets sick of propping up Ukraine, and after that point, maybe he would be able to succeed. And I don't know. The United States is viewed as being morally poor. For example, in Russia, the registered Baptists, this might surprise you, but they actually kind of liked Putin as a president because he allowed them to have freedom, but he also kept out evil things like LGB, all that stuff. That the Russian society looks very negatively on those things. And they view the United States as being a very morally poor country, and they view themselves as being a better Christian country than what the States is. And we need to remember that countries aren't Christian. It's not like God looks at Lauren, he looks at Merle, and then he decides, and Ryan, you know, he decides, is Lauren a Christian, is Merle a Christian, is Ryan a Christian? He doesn't decide, these are Canadians, okay, they're Christians. So, and again, don't expect your president to be Christian necessarily. That's not where we should look for spiritual example or guidance. A very famous quote of Putin is, "The breakup of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century." That's a quote of Putin. So he would like to build up again the greatness that Soviet Union enjoyed. Some people feel that Putin noticed that after the United States was in Afghanistan for 20 years and they left in 20 minutes, it was back to what it was before. Some people feel that he thought this might be a really good time to go attack now. I don't know. I don't know why, but those are things to consider in why. The horrors of war. Well, you've seen the pictures. I don't have to spend much time in here, but war is absolutely horrible. When we were in Ukraine on the 24th of February when the war started, so what we saw that very same day was long lineups of people at cars at every gas station and people at every bank machine. Everyone was trying to get their money out of the bank. They're trying to get their car full of gas. We went to the border. We saw a 7-kilometer lineup of cars at the border waiting to get out into Romania. We couldn't fly out of Ukraine because all the flights were canceled. We were supposed to fly out on the 28th. We went to Romania. Before you leave Ukraine, you need to go through customs, and then you need to go through customs again to get into Romania. Very common in even to Mexico, United States, it's like that. The border of Ukraine, their customs was being run by the army. They were there in their camouflage clothing, and they were there with a gun strapped over their shoulder. They stopped every car that came there to look who was inside, because as soon as the war started, at that point, Ukraine had made the rule, all men between 18 to 59 have to stay. So which of you men are between 18 and 59, stand up. Well, the next day, it's actually almost everyone, 18 to 59, so you cannot leave. The next day they said, okay, well, if you have three minor children, so if you have three children under 18, you can be accepted. So sit down if you have three children under the age of 18. So those people don't, but that can change. If they get desperate enough, that can change like in the snap of a finger. They can decide that you have to have five children or that's simply not a rule anymore. Okay, so you can be seated. So any of those people cannot go. They have to stay in Ukraine to potentially fight. We saw cars coming up to the border, and so they would look in there who it was, And if it was one of those men, then that car got turned around. And sometimes the lady would jump into the car, the wife would jump into the car and keep going. They would let her out and the children out, but they would not let the man out. Sometimes the entire family turned around and went back into Ukraine again. So we saw that. We saw people arguing and finding the soldier just told him, get out of here! Turn around, get out of here. He's not going to stand there arguing. So the man turned around and went back. We saw young men leave. If you had residency, for example, in Romania, you might be a Ukrainian, but you had residency in Romania, you could leave. We saw two young men go through, but the newspaper reporter was there yelling at him and saying, hey, why do you want to leave? Why are you trying to go to Romania? Why don't you stay here and help your country? Don't you love your country? And I saw through the man's eyes, I saw he wanted to argue, but wisdom kicked in and he just kept his mouth shut. I saw his facial muscles working, but he kept his mouth shut and didn't argue back. So those are things I did see. Death, they say, and we can't know, there's really no way to verify this. They say that about 1,000 Russian soldiers a day are dying. And that's not necessarily these people. That's like these people here. That's mostly young men. Now they have done some conscripting, and now they're getting older men. But if you saw those original pictures, it was almost always young men that were going. It was somebody's brother, somebody's son. He was doing his mandatory term of military service, and suddenly he finds himself in the front line getting shot at and killed. About 1,000 Russians a day and about 300 Ukrainians a day. You saw the pictures of civilian deaths. Many, many horrible pictures in the papers of civilian deaths. People who were just bystanders, innocent people who got shot by shelling, and all that shelling means is that someone was shooting a gun around and you happen to get hit with a bullet. You saw pictures of execution kinds of deaths where there were dead people found with their hands behind their backs taped up in a hole in the back of the head. You saw there was mass graves, like where they got a backhoe and really all they did was dig a trench for a tile and throw in a whole bunch of people and shove it shut and flee that area. And then later on when the Ukrainians took the town again, then they dig it out and try to find out who this is. And that, like, we saw those horrible things. Refugees of supposedly 8 million Ukrainians fled to other countries. And remember, that split up families because some of these people aren't leaving. But the mom, so one of the families in our church, the mom and a couple of girls went, and the dad and the brother were back. I don't think the only problem was the fear of the war. I think there were some other problems in the family too, but that happened, and even in the Mennonite church. They think that there's about 5.3 million Ukrainians displaced, but still in Ukraine, but not in their home. Their home might be blown up. That family I referred to had come from Kharkiv in the east, and their house that they had owned before in the eastern part of Ukraine, it got bombed. It's gone. There's nothing to go back to. United Nations believes that there's 17.6 million Ukrainians who need humanitarian aid, or 40% of them. That's the horrors of war. You saw all those buildings that got wrecked, including many schools, theaters, apartment buildings, which had nothing to do with a military target. There's those landmines that you're walking along. They're in the forest. They're beside the road. It's a bomb. It's under the ground. You can't see it. You step on it, and the thing blows up. And if you're lucky, it only takes off a leg, and more likely, or just as likely, it just kills you. There's those around. People are going to step on those things for years down the road because we don't know where they are. There was everyone read of the Bucha girls. Those were young girls, even like 13-year-olds that were raped by the Russian soldiers. Some of them became pregnant. They were taken to Western Ukraine, and the doctors tried to convince them to get abortions. In the one case where the doctor that Bruce was familiar with, the doctor with whose husband I butchered a steer, so I didn't know the doctor herself, but I knew her husband. She's a Christian, and she convinced them not to do that. So many of them decided to carry their children full term. Those are born now, just in a month ago or so. Those girls, some of them, there was one girl that saw her mom and her two-year-old brother being violated by the soldiers, and then her dad was injured in it so that he had a concussion that he was basically a vegetable. When the Russians were going to flee that area, Russian soldiers figured they'll put him out of his misery and shot him then because he was so injured, and then those Russian soldiers fled. Some of those soldiers were conscripted from the northeastern part of Russia. We would call them Eskimos. It's Russia's close to Canada and the United States and Alaska. Some of these, when these babies are born now, some of them look like Eskimo with the squinty eyes. So some of the girls now have a hard time to like their baby because it looks like their dad, like its dad, which was that soldier that horribly treated her. Those are all things that are happening. You've heard of Bakhmut, a town that both forces have been trying to take it for a long time. Both countries have been fighting for Bakhmut. And the Wagner Group leader, which is a rich man who has a private military, his own private army that he contracts out to other countries to do fighting for them, especially countries in Africa, and they're helping Putin. He got men from prison. So the deal was, if you fight in the front for 6 months and then you're going to get to go free, well, they're not ever going to get out of there. It's so terrible how it's going, the battle. But what he said is that the Ukrainians are fighting back like everything. It's like, we have to fight from street to street and building to building and stairwell to stairwell. That the fight is. The Wagner Group's strategy has been to send out waves of 100 men. This is straight from World War II. Send out waves of 100 men. They're trying to figure out where the Ukraine's strong and weak. Then the Ukraine machine gun them down. Sometimes they get all of them. Sometimes these men are running and they're stepping over top of the other ones that were there before that got shot in front of them, and he jumps over them before he gets shot. That's the horrors of war. Once the Ukrainians runs out of bullets, and then they drop, then Russia sends the really good soldiers in, and then the tide, you know, in that area turns then in Russia's favor. Russia has always been willing to expend many lives to meet its goals. It doesn't seem to matter to them. I don't know. How much did this war cost? We don't know. We hear of the billions of dollars that the United States is sending. And Canada, you know, buying tanks from the States so that they have something to give to. But we hear of... This is a cost. This money could have been put to a better use, much better use. The cost of war, how will it end? Only God knows. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better. We don't know. Okay, most importantly, the effects on the church. So as you've read books of Soviet Union in your childhood and the underground church, so the unregistered church, the Baptist unregistered church, that's what we're most familiar with. That's who believes the most the same way that the Mennonites do. Their official name is the Soviet Cerkve, which it's the word Soviet. What Soviet means is council or a union. Soviet is union. So it's a union of churches. Soviet Union in Russian was Sovietsky Soyuz. Soyuz is union, sorry, Soviet. Soviet is council. So it was a council of churches, a union of churches. There were many of them. That completely shocked me when I went there. I went to a youth meeting of the unregistered church. I had no clue that there were so many. There were hundreds of young people at this meeting that must represent, you know, hundreds of parents too. There were hundreds of young people at this meeting of churches who believed the same things that we do, largely the same about salvation, about living a Christian life. They were maybe weak in some of their teachings. They baptized by immersion. That was very common, but they believed very similar to us, many of them. But after Soviet Union fell, there was this idea that since you can move to the States now, it'd be good to move to the States, and it's easier to make a living there, and you're for sure going to always have freedom. So many of those churches had a lack of leadership before this war ever started, and it tended to be their ministers that left, their choir directors that left, and the newer converts and the poorer people were the ones that more tended to stay behind. In the Chernivtsi Oblast, which is the province of Chernivtsi, where Bruce Yonsei's lived, there were many churches who had no, they had maybe preachers, like men who could teach, but they didn't have a man in their church that was ordained. They do it a little differently than we do, but they'll have men that, a lot of the men will be called preachers. They can teach, but then certain men are ordained, and those ordained men are the ones that give communion. And it might be a deacon, but it's an ordained person. But many of them didn't have an ordained man. They would just have preachers. That was already before this started. But since that, if families that could, those families with those more than three children, those families, a lot of them left. Some churches lost up to 40% of their membership since the war started. They fled to other areas, or they went to the West for a better life, or as refugees. But it's very hard on the group that's behind. In Ukraine, at this point, Ukraine hasn't, that we know of, they have not jailed any believers for not agreeing to fight in the army. At this point, Ukraine seems to be giving them freedom of conscience, but that could really change as they become more desperate. In Russia proper, we don't know much about, but in Russian-held Ukraine, it's an extremely different situation. There have been people shot for not agreeing to fight. Almost all of those men have somehow fled and escaped, tried to scrape into Western Ukraine. Some of the Baptists, though, while they're non-resistant, some of them have agreed to take non-combatant service. That becomes a very gray term, because non-combatant means that you could be a medic, or help carry out injured people, but it could mean that you'd be a cook. That might be okay. But can mean you be a mechanic, but now that becomes very problematic, because if you start fixing tanks and whatnot, is that non-resistant anymore? But even a man who was a medic found himself in a unique situation. Suddenly, it's in a dangerous area, so with the medics to go out to get the people are soldiers with guns. And he's right with this group. And because he's a Christian now, and they know there's so many people praying for him at home, you go first. There's people praying for you. You'll be okay. There was in the one area of Russian-held Ukraine, everyone left this church except 19 old members. These old members were kind of pro-Russian, but now remember, they grew up in Soviet Union, and they had freedom now. It wasn't all bad. They were kind of pro-Russian, and they were allowed to stay, and the Russians have allowed them to keep coming to their church and worship, but Russia did give them some stipulations. One is that you may not say anything bad about Russia, fair enough, and you may not pray for Ukrainian victory. Now, stop and think for a second. Should we be? I don't think any of us think we should pray for a Russian victory, but should we pray for a Ukrainian one? We don't know what God's will is. Maybe God's will is Russia wins. As Christians, we are to be non-resistant and non-political. We should pray for peace. The Bible instructs that. The Bible does instruct to pray for peace. So it's just an interesting scenario there that they found themselves in. Another story that Conrad had heard of, Conrad's Bruce's son and friend from church, and he just came back from there and heard some of these stories. He told of a family that was fleeing Russian-held Ukraine, and they had to go through block posts, so there's sandbags and soldiers there to look at who you are. And so they kept asking them, "Yo, where are you going? Or why do you want out?" And they just kept their mouths shut. They harassed them, like, "Don't you want to be here? Don't you want to be here? Don't you like Russia?" And the one soldier even took a marker and drew that Z on the windshield. You know, that's a Russian army symbol, and watched to see, you know, what does this man speak up and tell them not to do it, what's going to happen? They finally let them out. They went through 6 block posts. So they finally drove away and saw one that had a Ukrainian flag flying at it. He said he almost could have gotten out and hugged the Ukrainian soldier, which again is something that he shouldn't do. We shouldn't, Christians shouldn't be politicians, interesting as politics are. But those are things that is happening. Maybe the saddest thing that happened is a rift in the Council of Churches, the Baptist churches. In Germany, many of the unregistered believers have fled in prior years, and many of Ukrainians that have fled, some of them have gone to Germany. The Council of Churches had a big meeting in Germany. There were bishops from Moscow that came in, and there were also Ukrainian refugees that were there, plus many Ukrainians and Russians that had been in Germany from prior years. And there was a rift, an argument that came up. The Russian bishops would not condemn the war. They didn't even call it a war. The Ukrainian, especially the youth, asked them, isn't this a war? And the Russian bishop said, oh, we need to be patient, we need to pray, we need to... They wouldn't call it a war, and the Ukrainians walked out in anger, and there's a rift in the church. The Baptist Union, the Soviet Council of Churches is split. Why didn't the Russian bishops condemn it? Well, they know good and well what happens to them if they go back to Russia and it was found out they condemned it. They're trying to save their own skin. They're trying, or maybe you'd say they were trying to be obedient to their authorities. We can argue whatever we want to argue once we get ourselves into trouble. But it's very sad. Satan uses politics and war, which is an extreme form of politics, as a wedge issue. So, that was in brief, a focus on Ukraine. I hope that what I said is true. I think that it is true. But it's probably not all true. And we will not know until later on how that this will turn out. It might take a long time yet. I hope not. I hope, pray for peace in Ukraine. Pray for the Christians in Ukraine. Pray for the Christians in Russia. And pray for leaders, as the Bible instructs us to do.